Icon Art Radio.
Hi, this is Bill Teeple with my co-hosts Donna Colby and Alan Cobb, and this is Icon Art Radio. Today our guest is Pam Whitworth, fresh off her very successful exhibit at the Unity Gallery at MUM. Are you fulfilled with your exhibit that you had and the response you got? Because I know that I saw it and it was a wonderful show. I was very impressed.
Thanks. Well, it was a great experience. Really exciting. I learned a lot and was just very inspiring.
Well, I know that you were taking some instruction with Charlotte Kane, but I don't know your history as an artist prior to that. Could you give me a little background?
Well, I've been making art all my life. Since I was a child. I have a BFA from MIU, when it was called MIU, in painting. So, you know, and I've mainly been working with water media. But taking the workshop with Charlotte really kind of gave my work a new kickstart. I hadn't been doing much for too long. I'd been putting most of my energy into my business, which is design related, but kind of all my creativity went into that. And I found that it was really hard to kind of find the time, the space, just sort of the psychic and emotional and creative energy to be doing much. Jim Shrosbury, who's a dear friend, had been telling me for years, if you don't have time, work small. And I couldn't sort of envision what that meant, and so I didn't do it. And then I took this workshop with Charlotte, and I don't know, I think it was like so many wonderful things in a person's life. It's an intersection of a lot of things that come together at a precise moment and catalyze something really exciting. But that seemed to be the case. It was where I was at internally. And then suddenly I had this new process that was really exciting for me. And then something happened where by working small and feeling very freed up from having a goal, you know, just feeling I'm working small, I'm doodling, I'm playing, I'm not attached to what I'm doing. It really opened up some kind of a channel to my subconscious. It was really interesting. It was very exciting, too. But just all kinds of images started pouring out, and they were abstract images before my work. Well, my work has always kind of bridged the abstract and the figurative, and I feel like it's most successful when it has elements of both. But a lot of the things that were coming to me were more abstract than anything that I'd done before, and very compelling. You know, I'd be falling asleep at night and I'd have something in my head of, you know, a red circle, and gosh darn it, I mean, I just had to paint that red circle. And there was something about painting small, and again, I think, you know, the intersection of where I was at that time, where it was kind of a revelation. It unfolded something for me, where these images would come to me, and where in the past maybe my response would have been to second guess them, to doubt them. You know, a red circle, you know, that's not enough. Or what does that mean? Or that's going to seem trivial, or that's like too decorative, or whatever. Something just happened where I could just completely set that aside and appreciate that a red circle was meaning something to me. It was right. Important, right. And it was important for me to put it down. So I think that this whole thing for me, the thing that's been so exciting, is that it's a very self-referral feedback loop. It's like the more I paint, the more I learn about myself. And the more I learn about myself, the more I like what's coming out onto the page. So, you know, I mean, I think that that's one thing that's really exciting about making art for artists.
Well, what I'm loving is she's just, we have been batting around ever since we started this show, the nature of art and making art and what it's all about, and you're giving us a very clear description of the what we've come to in terms of what it's all about, and how it happens, and how you get at the heart of the matter, and what you know, real art, you know, really moving art, how it happens.
Well, I think it's also.
And I mean, I'm just loving everything you're saying. I mean, you tuned into like a cognition, and then you just that was good. I mean, that's enough. That just, you had to figure, you just went for expressing that without layering on top of it all these reasons and shoulds and oughts, all the stuff that actually gets us further away from the heart of what art's
well,
about.
Well, I have my tendency, you know, still to do that. I think it's part of being a human being and being on a journey to be increasingly authentic to who you're here to be. But, you know, but it's become so clear to me. I envision it as like these two little beings that sit on my shoulders. One whispers in my ear, oh, this isn't worthwhile. Don't you need to be doing the dishes? Or this is trivial. And why don't you just wait until you can think of something more substantial to be doing? Yada, da, da, da. And it's gotten to be a joke, actually, to me. I mean, I recognize it right away when it starts to happen. And in my better moments, I can just ignore it. You
That's
know?
Good that you only have two little guys.
And, well, yeah. Shoulders.
And the work feels like little just zots, little gems. Like you just bore right through to the essence of like red circle or spiraling. I mean, you're doing it. And I'm just so inspired.
I love your point about I'm just doodling, because that's sort of the ultimate way of not taking it seriously, which is, in a sense, I mean, I remember Maharshi saying once a long time ago, the only thing in life worth taking seriously is not taking things seriously.
Yeah, so when you started, started out doing this painting this way, because you studied with Charlotte Cain, but your paintings definitely have their own unique flavor that's totally you. Kind of two related questions. How long was it in pursuing this process before you felt like you were ready to go public with them and have an exhibit? And how did that feel? Like, how did that kind of inner transition take place where you wanted to share your work with?
Well, a couple things happened. One, you know, the mine being kind of different from Charlotte's, that happened pretty much right away. Mm-hmm. We used to joke around when we would get together and paint, and everybody would say, oh, Pam's the little tantric artist, you know, because people were doing, you know, more ornate kinds of things. And I don't know, for some reason, I honed in on that simple thing right away. But I don't know, I've just continued to paint, and over this, it's been going on for maybe, I don't know exactly, I can't remember, 2.5, 3 years. And then over this last year, I've really been putting more attention on it. And people had been saying to me from time to time, you should show. And it didn't feel quite right. And one thing was that I didn't feel I had enough work that I would feel comfortable having a show, selling it, and starting over. I was still too, you know, I wanted to have my babies around me. And I knew that if I showed in town that, you know, naturally galleries need to make money. And then Jim Shrosbury asked me if I wanted to have a show at Unity. And I knew I wouldn't feel pressured to have to sell the work, although as it turned out, suddenly I started letting go of a lot more. But And Jim is a good friend, and I don't know. Again, it was just the right moment,
the right time,
you know,
yeah.
where he asked, and it felt like the right thing to do. And even though I had so many things going on that I thought, I don't know how I'm going to find the time to do all this, but even when I was hanging the show and I was kind of in that frenzy of trying to get it together, I was still really excited about it.
Well, and you created what to me felt like a temple in there, just by those two white panels that broke up the space in just the right way for your art. A lot of people commented on that, that in a way it was not just a show of paintings, but kind of an installation, because you had created, divided the space in that way. It worked well.
When I envisioned the space in the beginning, I knew I had to do something like that, because the pictures are so small. And it's such a large space, and I felt that there should be more intimacy, little alcoves, so people could get up close. Initially, I thought there might be a little more of that, but then once it started coming together, it felt like the right amount. And I had a lot of help. When I started laying out the pictures just at home, trying to begin to think about how I might group them, David Hansen came over one night, and that was revolutionary, because I don't know, for some reason I had started off taking a very conventional tack with it, thinking, oh, I'll sort of group things that are all the water pictures, and I'll group all the things that are abstract shapes, and I'll group the things that are a little more Japanese or floral. And David came in and he said, oh, no, 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 you know. And immediately I thought, oh, he's totally right. That would be just horrible. I almost made that awful mistake. And Mark Petrick also came over. You know, they're friends, and they were both extremely helpful. So I knew I wanted, as soon as I knew I was going to have the show, I called Mark, because he and I have a real similar aesthetic, and I love his eye, and I knew that, you know, if I could have anybody help me with the gallery space, it would be Mark. So,
well, it definitely worked.
Well, it also seems that the technique, when you started working with Charlotte, that you clicked with that particular style, both the scale and the technique, the gouache technique with the fine brush. Had you worked that way before at all?
Well, I'd gone back and forth. I had done some pretty realistic, fairly detailed paintings, and I had also done a lot of wet into wet. So I kind of go back and forth between those two things. I like that loose thing that happens with water media, that it's like firing a piece of ceramic and then seeing, you know, the surprise of what the fire creates. I love that feeling of working with the water and the transparency and seeing what surprises nature creates. And in some ways, I feel like these pictures, because of some of the things that I've done in the backgrounds and with the texturing, that I think some of the ones I really like meld those two things. They don't just have flat surfaces of color, but they have, you know, they're so tiny and so simple that they need that. They need texture, they need shading, they need something more. So I think there is a blending of those two tendencies.
Yeah, I agree. I think the best pieces had that.
You had different surfaces too, different kinds of
paper,
which also seemed to be an essential part of each particular piece.
Yeah, and I was, you know, I was experimenting a lot. Charlotte had wonderful antique paper, and of course I was never going to be able to locate something like that. It was gorgeous, but I did find some recycled paper that had a nice color, and then, you know, Charlotte was doing this thing of taking tea or coffee and painting it onto the surface in different ways. So it had kind of a rough, used, antique look. And I played around a lot with that, and then started like striping the background and doing different interesting things. I also was traveling, I was in Nepal, and I was looking for really great paper because they make a lot of handmade paper in Nepal. And I bought a bunch, brought it home, and some of the paper I liked the most was too soft. And when I would paint on it, it was just too absorbent. Mm-hmm. So I took acrylic mm-hmm. medium mm-hmm. and mixed different things in with it, coffee sometimes or tea, pigment. There were a couple of paintings. One was a completely green background. One was a completely blue background. And I mixed paint in with the acrylic medium so that I could get this background that I could work on. Same thing with the newspaper. I used some Nepali newspaper, and that was also very soft and absorbent. And that was a very funny thing. I took some pieces of that out in the yard, and I sprayed, polyurethane on the paper. Mm-hmm. I thought I was so clever. And then after I finished it, I thought, oh my God, what have I done? I've made it completely impervious. You know, I'm not going to be able to paint anything on it. So I took a little bit of watered down medium and painted it over that. And then it had some tooth, you know, where you could, yeah.
And it was wonderfully effective too, because it was like this sheer white.
That was paint. Wasn't the urethane or anything.
That wasn't the medium.
Yeah, that was just paint I painted on afterwards.
Because that was very effective, I thought, this like sheer veil of white where you could see the letters through it. But
yeah, that was painted on afterwards.
Because I'm very fond of any kind of art expression that involves layering. Mm-hmm. And your paintings do that in such a subtle and clearly expressive way. It's like standing in front of each one of your paintings, you feel some completely different kind of communication coming through from, it doesn't even seem like it's from you. It's almost as if it's from those shapes themselves and the universe coming through you or something.
Well, I think, you know, we've all had that experience when you're creating. The best stuff is the thing that comes through and you look at it and you think, who made that?
Yeah.
You know, where did that come from? It was, you know, just came through you.
Yeah. So. You also, since I've ever known you, to me, you seem like a walking, living work of art. The way you dress, your house, the way you decorate your home, your cooking and all of that. It seems like you very consciously live art. Were you like that as a little girl? Has that kind of been your way of life?
Now, does that come natural out of your nature, or have you been influenced by, say, the art of the Orient, which this type of lifestyle is more obvious?
I don't know. That's a really hard thing to say. I don't know. I think every one of us is just unique. You know, you come in and you have certain tendencies and certain tastes, certain things you're drawn to. It's taken me pretty much all my life up to now to even appreciate that thing that you're talking about. You know, I remember talking to a friend of mine maybe 5 years ago. It was a very dear girlfriend of mine who was dying, and we were talking about some pretty deep stuff, and I was, you know, whining for the millionth time about feeling like I didn't have any particular one thing that I was doing with my life. And she said, Pam, you're creating beauty all the time. That's your thing. And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, but, you know. She said, no, wait, no buts, you know. This is important.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I just was looking for like some job description, some great thing that I could say that I, you know, was. But she really brought me up short on that. And I think it's been sort of sinking into my being more and more in recent years that that's an important, valuable thing. And that's what I was created to do. Mm-hmm. And getting back to that thing about work and learning things about yourself through the choices you make as an artist and the things you put down. You know, the artist doesn't have, it's not only the artist, it's every human being. We're each of us individual. And I think it's what we spend our life doing, is learning to appreciate fully what it is that we, you know, who it is we actually are, mm-hmm. you know, what our unique gifts are, what we're here to do, what we're here to just own about ourselves, because there's only one of each of us. And so, I mean, and it's sort of absurdly difficult sometimes and complicated, but
to feel that that's good enough, you mean, or to
just own it, to just recognize it and appreciate it, and appreciate it
because it goes. I mean, in you were at one of the Odd Thursdays where we were talking about collaborative art, and in that, in the big scale, all of life is collaborative art. And I was watching French television the other day, and there was a young female French singer, and she was backed up by a row of eight violinists who are all playing like completely in their bows in unison, and they were very good, and then some other musicians with her. And suddenly I was aware of how every single person involved with making this television program created the experience that I was having. All these people who had practiced the violin for years and years by themselves in their rooms, this woman singing, the person designed her clothing, the person doing the lighting and the camera work. And it was like one of those insights of the collaborative nature of life and how grateful I was to every single person for their particular niche. And for your niche of creating mm-hmm. beauty, I know that everybody who's ever been over to your house for dinner or whatever will talk to somebody else about, oh, Pam's house. It's such a wonderful thing to go into Pam's house, because you just feel like you're, everywhere you look, you see something that delights your senses. And so it's a gift you are giving, and you don't know how far that's going to go, how those people who just come over to your house for dinner are going to be inspired to do something themselves they may not have done without your influence. So I think it's great.
And it's a two-way street. Yes. You know, it's also everyone that comes into my house, they add to that. Or I think about this show, you know, all the people that came together, you know, Bill, you helped me with the lettering, right. You know, I didn't know how to do that. And the day that I was going to put it up, I was so nervous about it. And I was talking to somebody at lunch, and she said, oh, I'll come over with you. Let's go. We'll put it up together. I'll help you. And that happened to me so much, where someone just stepped forward at some moment when I needed something and helped make it happen.
And this is, it's such a good example of, it's always a two-way street, and we're always feeding off of each other. It's always a collaboration, because we went in and saw what you had done, and we decided, oh, we should use that color. We should use a lighter gray from now on, because we liked the look you got. So we just feed on each other.
Yeah.
And yet the secret is, while working together, each one figuring out how to find themselves and be themselves, because that we've talked a lot about that in here, is how that's the secret, is each of us learning how to cherish ourselves for what we are and sing our particular note fully and stand there boldly and do it. Yeah. And that's not so easy. But this interview has been great, because it's really touched on that.
Well, and what you were saying before, too, about when something is kind of coming through you, then it's your expression, but there's something universal about it, so that when people... So it's not like this competitive thing, like, I want to be the best artist in Fairfield or something. It's that you are bringing out something to people that's uniquely you, uniquely Pam's expression. But at the same time, everybody who comes in there is tapping into that universal source of inspiration that came through you when you were creating it. So that's a very beautiful thing.
I think. What comes to my mind is that each one of us is perfect. I mean, truly, you know, we're just life. It's an amazing thing. And so what I feel is part of my journey, and part of what this creative process is helping me learn, is that when you're really true to who you are, when you're really open to that and allowing it to come through you, the universe celebrates that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we have so much fear about expressing who we really are. We have some intuition or we have some desire or some wacky idea, and we're fearful about allowing that to come through. And yet what I'm finding more and more is when I say yes, then the universe supports it. Whether it's, you know, my husband saying, fine, go ahead, spend the money, take the time, make a trip, be away from home for 2 months or whatever, or, you know, me not fussing too much over my mother-in-law, worrying about her and taking time for myself. She starts getting up in the morning and saying, did you write your journal this morning? Did you go down in the studio and paint this morning? You know, and I used to be afraid that she would feel ignored. Mm-hmm. But it's really, it's true. And that those are just very mundane examples. But this thing of the truth of who each of us is, and the more we allow that to come through, the more the universe applauds that. And it's because it's life. It's pure life moving through us. And that's why it touches people. Because that's exciting. That's that flow, that river of life energy that's moving. And
it helps them to be brave then, braver about doing it themselves when you set an example and live that in your own life.
Right.
Which brings to mind the Nelson Mandela inaugural speech.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a great thing. And you're just giving emphasis to that whole idea of, instead of being fear-motivated, just be motivated by life itself. And it's on the level of life itself that we have communion. We are one at that point. And art, this is what we have to get. The art is an act of communion.
Mm-hmm. One thing, too, that I've become aware, more and more aware of, is the need for solitude as an artist. And allowing myself to take that and not feel that it's either, you know, self-indulgent or lazy, but that that's where that creative process percolates.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.